It is November 2005, and this is Derry Dinkin of Ripley, Surrey, interviewing for the Second World War Experience Centre in Leeds, the reflections of Commander John Marriott. This interview is taking place in his home in Inkpen, Berkshire, and will include his time in the Royal Navy from the outbreak of the war. Commander Marriott, can you tell me your date of birth?
15th of June, 1922.
And where were you born?
London.
And did you have any brothers and sisters?
One brother, who was older than me, 3 years older.
And your father, what job did he do?
Well, he was in the Navy too.
He was in the Navy. And?
He was a captain in the Navy.
In the Royal Navy?
Royal Navy, yeah.
Commander Marriott, would you give me a chronological history of your reflections in the Royal Navy during the Second World War? You tell me in your own words. I believe you at 17, you were actually at Dartmouth.
That's right.
Before the beginning of the war. So tell me what happened then.
I was at Dartmouth. All the arrangements about the cadets, I was a cadet, were changed. And it was obvious that we were not going for the cadets training cruiser, because that had been sent off and modernized, ready for the war. But so we stayed another term at Dartmouth, and then we were all sent to sea. And I went to sea on the 1st of January 1940, and I joined HMS Repulse at Greenwich on the Clyde. The reason we were on the Clyde was that a German submarine had broken into Scarpe Flow, which was the base of the fleet beforehand, and had torpedoed one of our battleships. They wouldn't allow us to go back to any valuable big ships until the boom defences had been properly secured. That took about 2 months, and then eventually we went back. And from then on, I was based in the Repulse at Scarpe Flow. That's in the Orkneys. While I was at Scarpe Flow, the German invasion of Norway started, and all they sent all their troops up and landed at various ports and things around the North Sea, and we were sent up in the Repulse to try and stop some of these ships coming north. And two of the fast cruisers, I think they're called Knives now, and but we were lucky enough, we never met them. Somebody else did. And then they had this thing called the Battle of Narvik. You heard all about that.
What year was this? 1940. Yes.
Well, we thought we'd try, and one of the places they landed troops was Narvik. And the Germans were in quite strong numbers in Narvik. And then they set up some destroyers, the Germans did. And so we decided the thing to do was to send in destroyers too. And there was a destroyer battle which took place in the approaches to Narvik. We came more best in that, but we did lose quite a lot of ships. Then they came out, and we then had to send in a battleship, actually sink most of these German destroyers, which we did.
How long did the battle go on for?
I think it went on for about 2 months.
And did you lose many men as well?
No, the ship I was in, we didn't lose any.
Right.
Because we were well off the coastline.
Yeah.
Anyhow, then we came back in the ship to the Repulse, to Scarpe Flow, and then heard that I and three of the other midshipmen had been earmarked to go and be the backbone or take charge of the new gunroom of the King George V. King George V actually at that time was building it, well, in Newcastle, really. And so we went down and joined the ship there. And bit by bit, things started to happen, and more sailors arrived, more and more officers arrived. We were slightly limited because there was no big dock down there. And all they could do was to put on two screws, two propellers, to launch the ship, and they did that. But then we had to go somewhere, with a dock, dock the ship up and get the other two.
What was your rank?
Midshipman.
Right. And what were conditions like on the ship?
Oh, they were all right with us, perfectly all right. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of sort of stuff which hadn't been put away, a lot of work done, sorting it all out.
Mm.
Anyhow, one day we sailed. We had enough people on board, and we sailed from Newcastle, and we went up to Rosyth, Rosyth had big docks, and when we got up to Rosyth, we were put into the biggest graving dock. And while we were there, we had these extra two propellers, which increased the ship's speed from about 22 knots to 28.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember, while being at Scarborough Flare, Churchill, the Prime Minister, came up. He said he'd like to talk to the whole ship's company. And so we cleared lower deck, and he stood on, as they call it, the capstan,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
turning around on the board.
Mm-hmm.
And he addressed them all, and he was absolutely brilliant. And he gave us all a bit of a shaking, because you do realise, don't you, that the reason you're here is that now you've got a job to do. And your job to do is to sink the newest German battleship called...
The battleship was called the Bismarck.
Bismarck.
Mm-hmm.
Bismarck.
Mm-hmm.
And she had slightly bigger guns than we had, and so on and so forth. And it was very modern and up-to-date in radar and speed. After having heard that fairly chilling news, we were sent up to Scarborough Flare to do working up. While at Scarborough Flare, we all got down to our jobs, did whatever we'd been trained to do.
What was your particular training?
Well, I trained transmitting station, mm-hmm. worked out all the sums for range and distance and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I did all that. I was down there. I was also doing that in the repulse.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew a bit about it. So I went down there. And then I remember I had all the Royal Marine bandsmen who came and worked some of the dials from England. They were a charming, nice lot. You know, there was nothing to do. You get out all their instruments and play some good song.
For morale.
Yeah, Royal Marine bandsmen they were.
Mm.
They all became very well known after the war. And so we were there for a bit, and all went there. And then I was sent on my own to go and man a destroyer, which was called HMS Escapade. And that was what was called Mitchell's Destroyer. And I did that.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the ship as an extra officer for about 6 weeks, I suppose.
What year was this?
What
year was this?
1940.
Still 1940, mm. right?
Still 1940.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing convoy duties. There was a very, very nice captain who was in charge of us. He helped me a lot, you know. So that was good. And then I went back to King George V again. And then we suddenly heard the chilling news. Bismarck had broken up into the Atlantic and had sunk the Hood on the way down the Denmark Strait. That made us think of it. So by then, we made sure we got all the right numbers of ammunition and so on and so forth. And we then had 4 or 5 days of hunting, really, Bismarck. They were helped a bit in those days by reconnaissance. And then they went up and did a lot of searches and things ahead of us where we were going. And there was a new commander-in-chief, hopefully, who was called Toby, O-B-E-Y. And he was very good indeed. He was exactly what he wanted. And he got a sort of plan out of how we should get there and who should do what. And then they got in a lot of other heavy ships who operate in the Atlantic or Gibraltar or somewhere like that to come and join up. What happened was that we went all somewhere or other, and some of them, Catalina I think it was, saw the Bismarck and reported back to Montevideo. And so then he was able to decide where everybody should go and how we should deal with the ship when it was clear. So we did all that. Then they decided that the first thing they ought to do, because they've got this extra speed, is they ought to send off some planes with torpedoes, see if they could do a torpedo attack on her and reduce her speed. And that's what they did, and it was very successful. And she got her torpedo, which hit the steering. She couldn't then steer. She was trying to get to France, and she was hoping to go into that big dock at Brest. So these ships came north from Gibraltar, did this attack, and one of these attacks, they weren't all successful, but one of them was very successful, and they hit the Bismarck with 2 torpedoes, I think. So then that gave us a chance to get in a bit closer. We were doing about 24 knots or something, and we had the old Rodney there. She was only doing about 20. So it took some time to catch everybody out and get them all in.
What were the weather conditions like? Do you remember?
Yes, it was quite rough, eh?
Was it? Mm. That didn't help then.
No, it didn't, that's right. Mm. Right. So then we got into gunnery range. From gunnery range is normally above 20,000 yards. When we got there, the sort of action started. Well, to cut a long story short, we hit the Bismarck, I suppose, four or five times, put some of their guns out of action. But they never hit us. I don't quite know why they didn't, but they didn't. Then the administrator was obvious that she was going to sink. And of course, they were all abandoning ship and getting over the side as fast as they could. While all this was going on, we sent some of the smaller ships in to pick up survivors and do what we could. But there wasn't much you could do in that sort of weather. Mm. Soon after, it was all over, and we got ourselves together. And we went back to the west coast of Scotland, a place called Loch Ewe up there. And we couldn't go to Scotland in those days because it was still not safe. Mm-hmm. And so we went to Loch Ewe and we stayed there for a bit. And I always remember my one thing that happened that day. We came in through the boom. There was a boom with all the nets tied to these two posts, one on each side. And we came in through that. They knew we were coming. They knew what had happened. And all the crew members of the boom defense vessels, they all turned out. They were all on deck, and they cheered themselves and the all. They were so pleased that the Bismarck had gone. Mm. Yeah, that was great. You can put everybody's morale up there, you know. Mm. It was very nice. And then we stayed two or three days there. And then it was clear at Scarborough Flow, and we moved back to Scarborough Flow. That did about my time, but then more ships. I was then removed to do courses. They do courses for young officers.
What year was this now?
This was 1940.
Yes, okay. Mm-hmm.
And I had to go back to Portsmouth to do subtenant courses. Mm-hmm. They were things like gunnery, and torpedoes, and electrics, anything to do with wartime. I did that for about 6 weeks, I suppose, based in Portsmouth. So when that was all over, unfortunately I passed, and then went off and joined another ship. Here I was having left out that my brother, who joined the RMVR, was in HMS Dorsetshire. Mm-hmm. Dorsetshire was sent in and picked up a lot of German survivors. He did that. Brought them back.
What, from the Bismarck?
From the Bismarck, that's right. My mother was very cross because she'd lost all the special warm clothing and things that she stored up really for her sons when they tried to come home. Yeah, that was just a joke.
So you passed out of this course?
Yes, I passed out of course, yeah.
And what was your next commission?
I went up to Gaines Newcastle to serve in a new ship, which was called a Hunt-class destroyer.
What was different about this ship?
This one? Yeah. Which, you know, small one.
It was a small one?
Small destroyer.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it was called HMS Grove. Mm-hmm. And in those days, they built about 80 destroyers, and they called them all after Hunts. And Grove was one of them. Uh-huh. Grove is a Hunt somewhere just south of the Humber.
Right.
So I was there. And we were there trying to get the ship ready and so on. And doing that, yeah, we had a very nice time and enjoyed it.
We're now into 1941.
1941.
Yes.
Right. I had a good head of ashore and go down every day and work on board. So we then heard that we were to escort a very big troop convoy out to the Middle East. But because in those days the Mediterranean was too dangerous, too many submarines there, we were to go around the Cape.
Mm-hmm. Long way around.
Long way around. Mm-hmm. Took a bit longer though. Mm. And so that is what we did. I see. It was in November 1941 that I joined HMS Grove, according to this. And we did this escorting this troop convoy, 100,000 men on board, go around to the Middle East. And we went through and up the Suez Canal, or up the Red Sea, really, and then the Suez Canal. And then something went wrong with the ship. The main rotor went or something, and we had to go in a dockyard there.
With 100,000 men?
Hmm?
With 100,000 men?
No, they were in the troop ships.
Oh, right.
They all landed at Suez.
Uh-huh.
They were landed at Suez.
Mm-hmm.
And got rid of them, but it was just our ship which had to go on, but they wanted us for escort duties.
Yes, I understand.
It's raining. And then while I was there, I was sent up to do duties with other ships, because our ship wasn't working. And one of them was called HMS Erridge.
Sorry, Erridge?
Erridge, E-R-I-D, another.
Yeah.
during this, we were taking convoys then up to Tobruk, with a lot of benzene and petrol and all that sort of stuff. Didn't take very long. The Tobruk run usually took about 36 hours. And on this particular convoy, which was along the North African coast, our escort sank two U-boats. One German submarine here at Tobruk. The other one was blown out of the water with depth charges, somewhere quite close to our base there.
So were there a lot of men lost on that incident?
Well, yes, there were, but not on the second. The second one, they surfaced. The submarine's crew, they all surfaced and then surrendered. So we had to put them on board. So we had them on board. Mm-hmm. I was a junior officer, everybody else was watch key. I was told to look after these officers, put them in the boardroom and look after them. And they were all pretty truculent, didn't like being taken prisoner at all. And so we then turned around and made our way for Alexandria. On the way, the Germans were coming increasingly difficult. So I went out and saw the captain and said to him, I said, we've got to do something about these Germans. And we had 50 of them under my command. And I was only a subordinate, you know. They could easily have ever pardoned me and what they wanted to do. Make certain that when we arrived in Alexandria, they were properly looked after. And he said he would. And he sent a signal to the admiral in Alexandria. And we have German prisoners in the village. And when they come, they've got to have a proper guard on them. So we went alongside a jetty, and what people could be produced from the naval side came down and marshaled them onto the jetty and held them all in. And they were still quite truculent. And at that moment, three lorries turned up, and in them they had 60 Royal Marines, all with fixed bayonets. And they fixed bayonets were put in position, and they marched down onto the jetty. And when everybody was behaving themselves, they marched all the way. They went into the prisoner of war camp. And I thought they were one of the best jobs they'd ever done. Well, the land battle in North Africa was going rather badly in 1942, and Tobruk increasingly became the focal point of the Allies. I returned in HMS Grove. When I joined at Wall's End, a new ship just built, and together with another one called the Hayworth, escorted two tankers and two Greek store ships from Alexandria to Tobruk. It was the same thing again. Both tankers, unfortunately, were sunk by German submarines the first night out. Store ships were attacked by Stukas in Tobruk, the aeroplanes. Mm-hmm. My ship, the Grove, and the Hayworth, were immediately summoned back to Alexandria due to the prevailing situation. On the return passage, I was second officer of the watch at 7 a.m. on the 12th of June 1942, when I spied two torpedoes closing on the ship. Instructions were given to turn the ship toward the torpedoes to lessen its profile, and turn toward and go through them. Mm-hmm. But the bows and stern were both hit and broke off from the ship. The ship sank in 20 minutes, and on a complement of 180, only 35 survived, including me. I was on the open bridge at the time of impact, sustained a injury from a falling mast, and this injury subsequently formed the basis of a claim by me for being invalided out of the Navy. I tried to find my fellow lieutenant who shared a cabin with me. His name was Herman Hodge, and I actually relieved him earlier that morning. He came off at midnight, and I'd gone on and done the next watch. But the fallen cupboards, other debris after the torpedo, prevented me from reaching our cabin. So I decided I couldn't do that, and I had to go back. Sadly, this fellow never got out.
What year are we in now?
42.
42. Mm-hmm.
And I disembarked on the arrival of Alexandra with my father's binoculars. He was a great racing man. He loved racing. After he died, he passed his binoculars onto me, and I had them in his ship. Because I had them around my neck, I still had them when we were sunk. Well, that was good. I still got them there now. And the other ship, Hayworth, continued to drop depth charges, which added to the distress of those in the water. Really nasty things, depth charges were close to them, you know. You were a hell of a kid. And after that, we had no ship. I had no ship. And we were moved to a shore base. It was called HMS Canopus. And it was at Resl Tin, which is one of the big bits that sticks out from Alexandria. But they had a parade there, and the commander-in-chief came down. We had a parade there. We all had to march past him, march our own men and all our people would be trained let these demonstrators go. And I went past the commander-in-chief, he turned round to the officer who was in charge of the parade and he said, "What's that sub-lieutenant doing here?" And he said, "Oh, well, he's a survivor." "Oh," he said, "he can't stay here. He better go back to sea again." And I was sent back to sea again. And I was then sent down to join another ship called the Hero, an old destroyer. And I went down to Aden. We had a bit of a kerfuffle that time. Djibouti was owned by the French. And there was a concern that the Vichy French could have influenced the current status. And therefore, the British maintained a watchful presence. Well, the Hero went round the Cape. Lovely trip around the Cape. Couldn't have enjoyed it more. Never saw a submarine.
What was the weather like?
Hmm?
What was the weather? Was that, were you lucky with the weather then?
It was pretty good, yes.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
Yeah.
It was in the summer.
Yeah.
Christmas 1942, I was appointed to this ship called HMS Quantock, another hunt class destroyer, in one of the 150, and joined Gibraltar. And I got given a lift in another ship going out there. And I just travelled as a passenger.
You didn't seem to have much time off. You seemed to be on duty all the time. Did you ever have any chance?
We were abroad. We had good fun in Alexandria.
What happened there?
Oh, it was a great place for
was it?
Nightclubs and bars and all sorts of things. And racing.
Oh, right.
And golf.
Yes. Mm. So you had time for a little bit of pleasure in between.
A little bit of pleasure, yeah.
Yes.
Unfortunately, nobody had our golf clubs. You know,
never no, you wouldn't have taken them to war,
yeah.
Would you?
Then I was appointed to another ship, which was called HMS Quantock, a hunt-class destroyer, being one of approximately 150, as I explained before, and joined at Gibraltar. And I had a passage to Gibraltar on a ship that was participating on escort duty. And it was just the time the Sicily landings were being planned. And I arrived in Malta at the time to join one of the first convoys, which went to Sicily. Sicily landing started in July 1943, we sailed in darkness to Cape Passara from Malta on the 9th of July, accompanying 40 landing craft. The landing itself was unopposed, but I witnessed the sight of numerous British soldiers whose gliders had crashed into the sea after being released too early by American towing plane. This is one of the most unpleasant memories that I had of the war. After the landing, HMS Quantock returned to Cape Passara to pick up Marines and then insert them at Syracuse. One of the Marines, this was Chef I knew, had been at school. And in August 1943, Germans had pushed forward a bit towards Messina, and we moved up the coast and we went to Syracuse. And then from there we went out and did various sort of annoying things against the Germans. And one was their route from Syracuse north to Messina. We used to go up every second night and bombard the road. I don't think we did any good at all. Now we had to do it. Did it every night. Anyhow, we did that, and then eventually they crossed over onto the mainland. And we had to think again, and the next landing which we took part in was the one at Salerno. And we took about 100 landing craft on that occasion from North Africa to Salerno. And that was the time they had all these glider bombs, you know about them, when they used to release them from aeroplanes and things, and they glided down towards a suitable ship. Anyhow,
so you couldn't hear them coming then?
No. And at one moment in the Gulf of Salerno, there were 150 ships there. I went there the other day on holiday and there wasn't one. we did that. Now, once we got the troops there, we thought they were all right, but actually they had quite a hard time when they landed at Salerno. They then went back and got ready for the next convoy. The next convoy was to go up to a place north of Rome called Ancona, with another convoy.
To Anzio.
To Anzio.
Uh-huh.
And on the way into Anzio, we suddenly heard it announced on the radio that the Italians had capitulated. So all the troops in these various landing craft were frightened, thrilled, thought the war was over. Not a bit, it wasn't.
Was still in 1942.
Yes.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
So it wasn't at all how we managed to land these troops and get them ashore. The ship I was in was hit by a German tank. Went with them round in the stern. Didn't do any damage. Started a bit of a fire. Mm-hmm. We got a lot of rude signals from our own ship saying, "Bloody stupid of you getting so close." Now, did all that. And then we came back and we went back to Malta. And after that, I returned to England to protect and escort shipping on the East Coast. Once peace had been declared, I joined another ship called HMS Contest, east of Cowes, as first lieutenant. But that's all after the war, you see.
So your memory, you know, of 60 years ago is really very, very good. So what did your experiences have a significant effect on your life afterwards? With the fact that it's all really quite clear in your mind.
Yeah. Well, I think at the beginning of the war, one thought that joining the British Navy would be in the safest place in the world, you know. But then you suddenly saw all these ships, like the Hood, sunk, you know. You thought about that again, then.
Mm.
Yeah. And then, of course, there were so many ships sank by submarines. They were awful. Submarines are a great danger.
But was this something that kept coming back in your life, you know, after the war and in later years? What was it, something that you dwelt on, or was it something that just changed the course of your life or your character?
No,
do you think?
I don't think so, not really, no.
It was an autonomous time of your life.
Yes.
You just did what you had to do there.
That's right. And then after that, you see, I joined this other ship and went out to the Far East.
Yeah.
And it was all quite different, I think.
Yes, yes. Then we were talking peacetime.
Hmm.
So the whole ethos was totally different.
Yeah.
But your whole career was spent in the Royal Navy.
Yes, it was.
Yes.
Until I came out of the Navy, which was in 1964.
Yes, yes.
I didn't come out in 1959.
Yeah.
Yeah. Went on for a bit.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Commander Marriott, thank you very much for your time and for your reflections.
Oh.
And it's been most interesting. Thank you.